Good morning, sir. Before we get started, what is your name, sir?
My name is Kelly Joe McAdoo.
We have some phone calls to make, and as soon as we get the calls, the Honorable Mr. Johnson will conduct your hearing. I'll make the first one.
Thank you, sir.
This is the Board of Executive Comments. C, it's our understanding that you wish to participate in the hearing for Mr. McAdoo today. Am I correct?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
If you hold on, just hold on, because we need to make another phone call, and then we will get the hearing started. So, I'm going to ask Mr. Johnson if you would make the second phone call for us. So just hold on, ma'am.
Okay,
so we need the second one. 828.
Leave message. Thanks.
Yes, this is Arizona Board of
Directors. Please record your message. When you have finished recording, simply hang up or press pound for further options.
Yes, this is Arizona Board of Executive Premises. I understand that you wish to participate in the hearing for Mr. Luckabee this morning. This is his parole hearing. And if you get this message within the next few moments, if you will give our office a call, and that is 602-542-5656. That's 602-542-5656. Thank you so very much, and we will begin the hearing very shortly. Hello?
Yes, sir.
I'm trying to see if Miss... Hello? Hello, ma'am.
Hi.
Okay, the Honorable Mr. Johnson is going to begin the hearing very shortly, and then we'll go from there. So I'll turn it over to the Honorable Mr. Johnson.
Hello.
Good afternoon. Is this Ms. Beck? Hello. Good morning.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, is this Ms. Beck?
What?
Who am I speaking with?
Nancy Beck, Kelly's mom.
Okay, sir. Miss, we also, there was another phone call you wanted us to make to his niece, Tamara Lackey, and the niece's husband, Will Lackey, but we made that call and no one answered the phone. We did leave a message for them to give us a call to get this message while this hearing's in process, okay?
Okay, Tamara Lackey is, I'm Rhonda Pearson, Kelly's sister. And Tamara Lackey is Kelly's niece, our daughter, and she was actually going to be on call. She's a probation officer, but she was working with some interns today.
Uh-huh.
And then my son-in-law, Will Lackey, is actually at Fort Bragg doing some military training.
Okay. All right. Well, we did put a call in to us. So if your niece, Tamara Lackey, gives a phone call, message, he can give us a call back, and then we'll make some arrangements to connect her into the hearing at the time
of okay.
The hearing, okay? So, I'll also say, is Michael Pearson and Rhonda Pearson there with you, too?
Yes, I'm Rhonda, and my husband, Mark, is here, too.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and start the hearing at this time, okay?
Okay. I'll just let you know, it's a little, we're having a hard time doing a little bit. I've got to turn back, but it's a little, like in a barrel. So we'll do our best.
Okay, do you have us on speakerphone?
Yes, I've got you on speaker.
Okay, so if you need us to a point where you
cannot hear, please interrupt and let us know so that you don't miss out on any part of the hearing, okay?
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you. Mr. McAdoo?
Yes, sir.
Sir, for the record, could you please state your name and your ADC number for us?
My name is Kelly Joe McAdoo. My Arizona Department of Corrections number is 079846.
Okay. Mr. McAdoo, you appear in the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, sir. I'm going to introduce you to the board members that will be conducting your hearing today, okay?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. To my far left was the Honorable Luis Quinones. Coming down the line is the Honorable David Neal. In the middle, you have the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who is our board chair. To my immediate left is the Honorable Mrs. Gail Rittenhoff. And, sir, my name is Michael Johnson. I'm going to be acting as your panel chair today, okay?
Good morning to all.
Okay. Sir, you were appearing before this board, and you did understand what I was explaining to your supporters why that we did try to make a phone call to a couple of people. We did leave a message. I hope you're able to hear us leave that message on the phone. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Sir, you are appearing before this board, and I'm trying to make sure that I'm understanding, and you can correct me on what the release package is, but I do have a board hearing notification. The most recent one is dated March 4th, 2018, and it asks that you're marked up here for a regular parole, but it doesn't have home arrest or absolute discharge on there. So, do you understand what you're hearing this for? And I'm going to ask the board members, because I'd like to.
If I may, there were actually three different times that they had me fill out the paperwork for that.
Yes, sir.
And in the first one, it was a mistake because they had it marked for parole to consecutive hearing, and I have no further consecutive. The second notification did state only regular parole, but then they came to me again with a third set of paperwork, and I signed that on April 4th. 2018, and I could even show you here via camera, it has the inclusion of regular parole, home arrest, and absolute discharge, all three that I would expect to be for this hearing. And if you'd like, I could hold that up to the camera to show you that notification.
No, so that's good, because I was under the impression, usually we have on these hearings, it is for regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest, but the notification paper that I have runs marked dated April 4th, 2018. They didn't mark the absolute discharge or home arrest, so if there was a third one, I just didn't get a copy, or I don't see a copy in here, but I'm going to go ahead and continue the hearing that you hear for a hearing for absolute discharge, regular parole, or home arrest, okay?
Thank you, sir.
All right. So you are currently serving a sentence for robbery and theft. These sentences are running consecutive to each other. The sentence that you're currently on is a robbery theft charge. You will become parole eligible on August 28th of 2018. Is that about right, sir?
Yes, sir. I know I'm going approximately 5 months early on this, and honestly, I don't remember the code on it because I'm under the old code.
Right.
As far as whether that 5 months meant 5 months early release for that, or whether the release date would be held until August at that point, that was a matter of where I myself was not clear on. I do seem to recall that, you know, back 30 years ago, guys were getting out 5 months early. If they met all the criteria, but honestly, that's something I don't remember clearly.
Okay. Well, on the documentation that I have here, sir, says that you become parole eligible on August 28th of 2018. The paperwork we have here. So we that time can sometimes be a little confusing, and you know we can only go by the information that they sent us here on the board. But also, looking at this release certification that I have, and it says that you will revert back to AO1, which would be the life sentence. So I'm trying to understand that even if you get parole, looks like you revert back to the life sentence. So is that an understanding that you have?
My understanding is, as the way it was explained to me by the previous board members, and as well as the court documentation, the case documentation that I've read on this, is they have what is called a Class B and a Class A parole. In 2013, August of 2013, at my second parole hearing, and in fact, this is in, if you look at page 2 of my parole packet, my first parole hearing was on February 28, 2013, and I received a vote of 2-2 there, and then on August 28, 2013, I was granted parole. Now, that was what, as was explained to me, was a Class B parole. In other words, a parole to the consecutive.
Right.
Okay. And then I was informed at that time, as well as I have been informed at other times, and as well as from everything that I've read in case law, my next hearing, which essentially will be this hearing here, would then be a parole, would be a parole hearing for regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest, that including the life sentence. So it would be an overall. So essentially, I had to make parole twice on the life, that being parole from the life to the consecutive, and essentially the consecutive sentences were then made concurrent to the life. And that would continue on until I became parole eligible with the sentences that were consecutive at that point. And then at that point, my hearing is for regular parole, that including the life.
Okay. Hold on 1 minute, sir. Dr. Wright, did we get the...
Yes, sir.
The other ones.
Yes, sir.
I'll take a moment out, sir. Just hold, stand by. I'm going to try to...
Yes, sir.
Your niece is calling in, so I'm going to try to get them on the line, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Good job.
Is that understand? As of 2019, he was granted parole to his next consecutive sentence, former life sentence, and then to the two remaining sentences were concurrent, which were wrong.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected or is no longer in service.
You have reached a number that has been disconnected or is no longer in service. If you feel you have reached this recording in error, please check the number and try your call again.
I'm going to try one more time.
We're sorry. You have reached a number.
Mr. Weatherby, do you have a formal message for
you? You have reached the number that has been disconnected, or...
Yes, sir.
What is that, sir?
Give me just 1 second here, if I may. Let's see, 432, I'm sorry, 828, area code 828.
Mm-hmm.
Number 432-6055.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Ms. Radke?
Yes, this is Ms. Radke.
Okay, this is the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. We were just giving you a call up. We're in the process of doing the hearing for Mr. Luckily.
Yes.
Okay, hold on a minute. I want to make sure we still have everybody online, okay?
Okay.
Hello?
Hello?
So, Ms. Radke, you on the line?
I'm here, yes.
Okay, Ms. Beck, are you still on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Johnson?
Yes, sir.
Sir, if I may, there seems to be some possibly maybe a matter of where there may be some confusion regarding what type of parole hearing I'm here for today, as well as what the possibilities are. And I would ask that if it is a matter of where maybe there is some confusion there with the board, do you think it would be better, sir, that we resolve that before we go any further? I mean, I could send the case that oversees this. I don't have a copy here with me, but I have researched this, and my understanding from my perspective is that this would be a parole hearing for regular parole, absolute discharge, or house arrest. And I know, I sense that some of the board members have some concerns over whether or not those may be the actual legitimate options. And I would rather for the board feel more secure in those options rather than proceeding and with any other reservation that way. So I would defer to the board in that sense as far as rather than, you know, is this something a matter of where we maybe we need to postpone for a number of days?
Mr. Luckadoo, I don't think it's something that we need to postpone. I'm going to tell you what, in looking at this, what I think having the board may weigh in it, that you are here for a parole hearing for absolute discharge, regular parole, or home arrest. That is what you're hearing this for today, sir. That if you're granted home arrest or absolute discharge or regular parole, then you go back to being paroled to your life sentence. And I think that's what's going on. If you get home arrest, then you get home arrest, but you do revert back to your life sentence on the parole. Do you understand that?
That's where I feel there may be an element of confusion, sir, because the case law that I have read on that includes that the hearing at this point would include the consideration for parole on the life sentence as well. It wouldn't simply be a matter of reverting back to life, but rather that the parole hearing at this point would include all charges for parole to release at that point.
Okay,
that's where I'm afraid there may be a matter of confusion.
Well, sir, what I'm understanding is that you're currently on your consecutive sentence. You did get, this board did vote to move you to your next consecutive sentence.
Yes, sir.
Voted to move you to your next consecutive sentence. It took you to an 8-year and a 10-year sentence for 8-year for robbery, a 10-year sentence for theft. You're currently serving the 10-year sentence, which becomes parole eligible on August 28th of 18, and your early release credit date for that charge would be April 28th of 2020. Now, according to the information that I have, it says that you would reserve back to your life sentence, which would mean that if this board paroled you, say gave you home arrest, and you got home arrest, then you would remain on home arrest until you would come back before this board, and the board would give you maybe regular parole, and then from there until you get an absolute discharge. This hearing does not
you could get an absolute discharge, but it doesn't automatically grant you an absolute discharge. Is that
understood? If I may, am I to understand that you're saying that even with the present board, that home arrest would be an option? Now, when you say home arrest, we're talking about home arrest like to either to my family's residence or to a halfway house. We're not talking about simply reverting back to the life sentence and still being imprisoned.
No, sir.
In that
no,
case.
Sir. No, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's what that, whew, that you know. I'm sorry. That's where my misunderstanding was, sir. I thought when you were speaking of reverting back. Okay. I'm sorry. I think Mr. Quinones had something.
So basically, I'm going to go to Mr. Quinones. But so basically, and I just want you to be clear what my understanding is that like if you get it, then you would go back, be on parole, but you would still have that life parole until you receive an absolute discharge. Okay, and until you get the absolute discharge, you would still have that life sentence that would be still pending. So if you understand that, then I think we're pretty clear, Mr. Quinones.
Well, all I was saying was I think that the language, at this point, is that he has the option of at-home arrest or regular parole after discharge, but if he is granted home arrest or regular parole, it's on a life sentence, meaning he's got a lifetime of parole until he earns his way, possibly past it.
Yes, yes.
Yes, sir. That is my understanding as well. I'm sorry for any confusion that way.
Well, that's all right, sir. That's what we're here for, to try to get it cleared up so that everyone has an understanding of what we're actually doing here, okay? So I think we got that pretty cleared up, sir. I'm going to go ahead and move on with your hearing, okay?
Thank you, sir.
All right. So according to the packet that we have here, sir, we do have quite a bit of information that we do have quite a bit of supporters that are on the phone. We have several support letters as well as we have a complete release package that we have here from you that talks about the things that you have done, what you are doing. You can say in several programs throughout the time that you have been incarcerated, sir. Your release plan said that your first preference will be to own your apartment at 220 East Concourse Street in Marlington, North Carolina, 28655. And then that's your Rhonda, your sister, that's listed. Your second one will be the Aiden House at 2601 East Roosevelt Street in Phoenix. That's the Monica Madrino, the director of that program. It says that you have an appointment with Bench Construction and North Carolina and being drywall here in Arizona, sir. There is a letter here. You do have a letter from Phoenix Oasis Reentry that's dated April 8th of 2018, as well as a letter from the Able House dated April 8th of 2018, that if you are released, that you will be able to go to one of those places. You have no disciplinary actions within the last 5 years, according to the information that we have here. I do have a copy of the acceptance letters that you actually have, as well as a list of all of the programs that you've actually taken and programming that you've been involved in since you've been incarcerated. It looks like your last violation was in 1908 for threatening with the harm, and that was informally resolved, sir. You have not had any violations since that period of time. There was one in 2011, however, that was dismissed, so I'm not going to count that one. So you did have a special hearing in 1995 that was not recommended to the governor. As you previously stated, on February 28th of 2013, you had a parole hearing for 31412B, was paroled to your next consecutive sentence. That at that time, that was actually denied in February 28th of 2013. You came back 6 months later, August 28th of 2013. The board did grant you parole to your next consecutive sentence. You did have a hearing scheduled for April 1st of 2018, and according to the documentation that we have, that you were ineligible for that, so now you're here on the parole again. Is that about right? You seem to be pretty well up and first on keeping up with exactly what's going on with you, sir, so that's a good thing.
So, listen.
Mr. Lucky, do I have going to go over the incidents and information involving the incident that occurred back in 1988? When I go over that information, sir, I'm going to come back to you and ask you in your own words to tell this board what you were going through during that period of time. And in your own words, tell this board what changes you have made and what has happened since you've been incarcerated that has changed your life around, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. So, sir, this states that back on July 19th of 1988, the owner of 39-year-old Frank victim was the owner of Old Bay Print Shop located at 7146 East Stinson in Scottsdale, Arizona, say that the employees came in and police found the victim's body wrapped back in a pool of blood. The victim's body was covered with items. Paper and a broken handcuff that was attached to the victim's left wrist. Says during the investigation, they discovered that his black leather wallet, which contained three credit cards, were also missing, along with the victim's bronze-colored 1985 Corvette that was also missing. The police department did an autopsy that was conducted on the victim. According to the autopsy, concluded that the cause of death was blunt force chest and head injuries. On July 27, 1988, and it looks like San Diego, California. Police were checking a parked vehicle. They checked the ID number. It was revealed that it was the victim's stolen car that had been taken during the robbery homicide. They placed the surveillance on the vehicle. They observed the pickup truck drive up to Carvel, and they observed you get out of the truck and begin to drive the truck, the Corvette. Subsequently, sir, after that, the police did got after a short pursuit, take you into custody. According to the information that we have here, says that the shoes you were wearing were similar to the shoe impressions found in the victim's blood, that also believed to be blood stains and the stitching of the soles. It also said that a palm print found on a table near the body of the victim was positively identified as having been your right palm print. You were convicted by a jury trial. Is that right, sir?
Yes, sir. I was convicted by a jury trial.
Okay, sir.
Yes, sir.
So why don't you tell this board, sir, in all words, what was going on with you at that time when this incident occurred? What occurred, and what's occurred during the time that you've been incarcerated, sir, that has changed you as a person?
Yes, sir. If I may, even before beginning, first of all, I'd like to give thanks for even just the opportunity to appear before you today. You know, thanks on behalf of myself and my family. First, thanks to God, and thanks to the board for hearing me today, and thanks to everyone who's participating here today. I would also like to give thanks for the board members that previously granted me parole in 2013. And I hope I have honored and respected their decision and having been on parole now for almost 5 years without incident and without any disciplinary violations or anything of that nature since. a lot of individuals that come before you, I'm sure, may tell you that they came from a bad situation, a bad family, a bad home, an abusive situation that way, maybe bad schools, bad neighborhoods. I will tell you honestly, that was not the case with me. I have always had tremendous support from my family. They have loved and cared for me and provided for me every single day of my life, including every single day of my incarceration. I have been extremely, extremely fortunate in that way. The truth of the matter is, the responsibility is solely mine. The problem lie within me at that point. As a teenager, as a juvenile, I was a number of things. I was a number of good things, but I was also a number of bad things. I was a liar. I was a cheat. I was a thief. I was misguided in many ways. I was conceited. I was arrogant. I thought I was smarter than everyone around me. For me, it was was a matter of where I just didn't have any real direction in life. And part of it started when I dropped out of high school. My first consideration for quitting school actually was back to the ninth grade, and I was doing fine and everything in that way. But I dropped out of high school. I had no real direction, so it was a matter of where I lacked my own moral compass. I lacked my own drive to be all that I could be in that sense. And that led to me making a number of bad decisions. And in regard to the death of Mr. Strassi and everything, I have never denied having been in an altercation with Mr. Strassi, and I take 100% complete responsibility for the unfortunate death of Mr. Strassi. I've never been anyone who's been a member of a gang. I've never done drugs in my entire life, not even smoked weed. I drank a little alcohol as a teenager, socially and everything, but even that wasn't anything for me. So it's not that, and I've never been anyone who wanted to cause anyone harm in that way. But I stand before you here today, and I tell you that I am the person who is responsible for Mr. Strassi's death. And it's an absolute unfortunate event. There's no way to take anything like that back. You can't give someone their life back. You can give a lot of things back, but you can't give someone their life back. And as much as I would love to, that's just, it's not possible. I was in an altercation with Mr. Strassi, just as you said, and the death was not intentional. The cause of the death, the actual cause of the death, was a sternum fracture that impinged the heart. And this wasn't a matter of where there were, multiple contusions overlying the chest or anything. There was a single sole contusion overlying the left pec. And from all evidence that I've seen and my attorneys had seen and found at that time and everything, it appeared to be from when I pushed a number of boxes of real heavy, thick paper atop him that, as was explained to me, probably weighed hundreds of pounds. And that being the ultimate cause of death. I can tell you that at the time of the incident, as I was leaving from the print shop, that Mr. Strassi was still verbal at that point. And so in that moment, whether it be just the mind of a teenager, and the irrationality of a teenager, at that point in time, I really had no idea of even the thought of this individual dying. Now, as an adult, 30 years later, I could see the great potential of something like that. In that moment, with my mindset, and I'm not making excuses for my age or anything of that nature, but, as a teenager or something like that, we tend to be irrational at those ages of where we don't have that foresight, just as the information that I had sent you of where the Supreme Court had come to that conclusion, and they've made a number of decisions based on that. And I myself was only 23 days from still being a juvenile myself. I had just turned 18 right before this incident. I would tell you that to Frank Strassi and to all of his loved ones, from the deepest of my heart, I say I'm sorry. I never wanted to take anyone's life. Never. I'm so sorry for taking him away from his family. I'm so sorry for taking him away from everything that he loved. And, you know, I could see the pain in his mother's eyes and everything when she took the stand and how that affected her. And I have no doubt that his mother loved him just as much as my mother loves me. And if even an ounce of that is true, there's no end to the way that she felt about her son, you know. And there's, as far as what I have tried to do with my life since, I want to say as well, I did take Mr. Strassi's car as well. I took the keys from him, and I took his car, and I went back to California. I own up to all that. I did that. That was me. That wasn't anyone else. That was me. And since the time that I've been incarcerated, I have tried to make absolutely sure that my imprisonment is not a negative. I refuse to waste a single day of my life. Every day of life is a gift. And I approach everyone in the same way. I always, every day, seek to better myself in some way, somehow. I don't have anyone really to speak these points on behalf of myself, so forgive me if it sounds a matter of arrogance when I tell you some of the accomplishments that I made. It's not. It's just a matter of I seek very hard to better myself in every way. In the time that I've been incarcerated, I've accumulated over 250 college credits. I have a 4.0 GPA. I've earned 6 degrees minus 8 credits for one in science. I've earned an Associate of Business in Business Administration. I've earned an Associate of Applied Science in Business Management. I've earned an Associate of Economics. I've earned another Associate in General Studies and another Associate of Arts in Fine Arts, as well as, like I say, I'm only 8 credits away from completing the Associate of Science in Science. And the only reason I haven't completed that is because it specifically requires lab sciences of chemistry, physics, or biology, and those are available to us here. Otherwise, I would have already completed that degree. The only reason I haven't pursued my education even further to bachelor's, master's, and doctor's, in which I fully intend to, has simply been a matter of financial reasons. I didn't want to be an even greater burden to my family, and these were the only scholarship opportunities available to me. When I graduated from college, I was valedictorian for my class. I graduated summa cum laude with complete honors. I've not only accumulated those degrees, but over I've have 13 certifications in work-based education and career training education, if I may, and hold a moment, please. I'm looking actually at my educational achievements on page 23 of my parole package.
Right, so we do have your parole package and all the things that you've accomplished. You have accomplished quite a few things since you have been incarcerated, which you are to be commended for continuing your education and the things that you've done.
Thank you, sir. And like I say, you can see there where I have 13 different certifications. And I say this, the average inmate, unfortunately, doesn't earn one certification, okay? Doesn't earn one degree.
Okay, well, Mr.
Yes, sir.
We're not here on a hearing for other inmates. We're really here just...
I don't mean in that sense, sir.
Okay.
I actually, my job, sir, is I work as a college advisor.
Okay.
That's what I do now.
All right.
And so I try to encourage inmates. That's the position I say it from. I try to change that statistic today and here. A number of the programs that have helped me to reach this point, the Arizona Department of Corrections doesn't offer a program to earn all of these degrees and certificates and everything. Much of that is where I've created opportunities, either volunteering as a teacher's assistant, enlisting the voluntary work of professors in that way, and starting programs to help other inmates earn their degrees. I've set a number of records even here locally, even at just this unit, for the number of students enrolled into college. And so when I say that the average individual, you know, average inmate hasn't earned one certificate or one degree, I speak from a standpoint of I am the person on the front lines encouraging that.
Okay.
I am the person on, trying to change that statistic. You know, so I don't say that arrogantly in that way. This is a matter of where I'm right here trying to make sure that, and there have been hundreds of students that I have matriculated, tutored, both on the collegiate and secondary education levels, as well as programming for programming achievements in that way. I've earned over 80 plus certifications. I regularly volunteer to teach a number of classes and to help facilitate a number of classes, everything from different language classes,
mm-hmm.
And music classes to...
Mr. Luckenberg, I'm not trying to just cut you off, but we do have your package, and just, you know, for the sake of time, because we do have... several hymns that we have. I do want to go back to when this incident originally occurred, sir, that you went to San Diego. Something that, you know, you went there, and how did you wind up with foster parents and foster care when you went to San Diego?
When I was in San Diego, initially there, I was living pretty much on the streets. Again, I was a teenager who didn't have a whole lot of direction. And it was a record-breaking winter that year in 1987. There were 100 mile per hour winds in LA. It snowed on Malibu Beach. It hadn't snowed there for over 25 years. And so it was pretty extreme weather conditions. And so to stay warm and everything, I would go into... Excuse me just a moment. To stay warm, I would go into the shopping centers, and that's where I would go to stay warm in the evenings. And I ended up fainting in one of the shopping centers. And when I came to, there were people all around me and everything, and they had taken me to the hospital, and they had diagnosed me as having left lumbar pneumonia, malnutrition, and exposure. And so, as a result of what was presumed to be my age, because I looked really young at that point and everything, they automatically, because I said from my statement was that I didn't have any family present there or anything, I was placed in foster care.
Okay.
My initial, yes, sir.
Okay, so also, sir, you said that during that time that you were wanted for questioning in North Carolina for the attempted theft of a Porsche automobile.
Yes, sir.
Well,
yes.
What happened in that incident?
In regard to that matter, like I was saying earlier, as far as a teenager and everything, I was an individual without real direction. And so my way of trying to resolve problems or anything in that way was simply to run from the issue. So when that allegation arose in North Carolina, you know, and not just out of the allegation itself, but I left North Carolina, and that's what I did.
Did you take a pause or what?
So that's not my case, and that's the way I was explained, told to explain it as well. That is not my case. There was a bad situation there that where my name was brought up in, and that's not my case. So.
All right. Well, it says that you were wanted for questioning in North Carolina for the
theft of a
automobile. So it would lead me to believe that you had some involvement in that, or some reason why your name came up. And then,
yes, sir. I was questioned on that matter.
Okay. And then
absolutely.
And then the theft of this victim's automobile just makes me wonder if you were just obsessed with trying to get a fancy car during that period of time.
I understand the connection that could be drawn from that.
Okay. So what was your connection? Was this a friend of yours, or what happened with the Porsche?
As far as
your involvement,
are we talking about North Carolina?
Yes, sir.
In North Carolina, actually, how this allegation arose, sir, was some individuals who claimed to be friends of mine called in and said, "Hey, how much money can we get for this allegation?" For they basically called one of those numbers trying to get money, and that's where the allegation arose.
All right, and so I'm going to see if the board has any additional questions for you at this time. Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Lockerbie, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I am kind of curious about something, and let me begin by saying that I recognize that police detectives are not psychologists or clinicians. There were some serious concerns by the criminal justice community that you were very manipulative during this investigation. There was a murder. You absconded to California. If I'm not mistaken, you ran from the police in California, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That would be correct.
Did you ever submit to any sort of psychological evaluation inside the Department of Corrections?
Yes, sir.
And we didn't have that. And I'm
prior.
Correct, sir.
Mr. Quinones, may I be direct?
Yes, sir.
In that way, it would be honest to say, sir, that I was manipulative. It would be honest to say that even to the point of being conniving. And I don't mean that in every aspect of my life, but I mean when you have a matter of where you know, if you're a liar, you're a liar. And the truth of the matter is, you know, you can't come from a standpoint, and that was part of the problem of where here I was as a teenager. I was a liar. I thought I was smarter than everyone else around me, essentially, even narcissistic at times. And that is the truth coming from me today, okay? And for me to be able to sit here and tell you that today, the thing about where I talk about of in the past of where I ran from my problems, I ran even from conflict and things in that way, I am so grateful for the experience that I have had here today in prison. Okay? And regardless of the decision that you make here today, I will be grateful even for that decision, because everything so far, first of all, I know is by God's hand. Okay? And secondly, the lessons that I have learned here in prison does not give you the opportunity to run anywhere. I couldn't run from my problems in here. And that made me completely reevaluate everything as an individual. I had to become an honest person in that way. You don't survive in here by being a liar. You don't survive in here by being deceptive. You don't survive in here by being manipulative. And so it made me totally reevaluate who I was, not just out of a matter of survival, but a matter of out of ultimately beginning to understand what is the purpose for authority, what is the purpose for rules and regulations. And I don't say this lightly. Staff, first of all, were a major influence in that. I've had some of the most excellent role models here as staff members. And by showing them my work ethic, and I come from an extremely strong work ethic. Both of my parents were entrepreneurs. You know, I know some things about the board. For example, Dr. Wright, my mother came, she comes from the same cotton fields as you speak of, sir. And she grew up in those. And that kind of work ethic was instilled in me. And once I embraced that, once incarcerated and everything, I've worked almost every single day since my incarceration. Many of the jobs have been jobs that I've created out of recognizing a need within the community, such as with college education and everything. But what it also has helped me to do is that through being given responsibility, it has made me to recognize the necessity for rules and regulations in that way. Okay? So when I look at myself from back then, I'm truly ashamed of who I was. I'm truly ashamed of having been all those things. And now I strive every day to be a better person. I strive, you know, I pride myself on who I am today. I've never been happier in my life with who I am than who I am standing right here before you today. I have never felt more honest in my life. I have never felt more confident in myself. I have never felt more empathetic to everyone around me in that way. And a great deal of it comes from the lessons that I've learned here in prison. You know, and they have been some extremely hard lessons. Nonetheless, they have taught me life skills that I know I will carry with me throughout every day the rest of my life.
Okay, sir. So I'm going to stop it right there.
Yes, sir.
Because I don't want to monopolize the time. There may be questions from fellow board members.
Yes,
thank you, Mr. Luckett.
Yes, sir. So the board have any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Can you hear me okay, sir?
Yes, sir, Mr. Neal.
You may have answered this, and I missed it. I was reading through some things in your file. Why was there half a set of handcuffs on the victim?
Yes, sir, that is true.
Well, why?
In the midst of the fight, at one point, I did handcuff him. Those handcuffs were there at the scene. Okay, and so it was an attempt to get the keys away from him during the altercation. However, though, he did break the handcuffs. And if you look at the autopsy reports, you'll see that it was a matter of where there were just minor lesions overlying the wrist, which would substantiate that he wasn't handcuffed, but for just a brief time. And if I may mention as well, Mr. Neal, and I mention this out of respect because I know a number of you there on the board are highly educated in these matters, okay? And so, for example, on the arms themselves, there were only two marks as far as defensive injuries in that way.
Okay, all right, but where did the other half of the handcuffs, where did you have it hooked to or whatever, did you broke it away from?
No, sir. It was a matter of where, at that point, when I handcuffed him, it was a matter of both of his hands were together. And just as I had gotten the keys from him and was attempting to leave, that's when he began to stand up. He broke the handcuffs, and from I didn't, in that moment, didn't recognize where they went to, but later it was discovered through the evidence photos and everything that the handcuff, the other half of the handcuff, fell to the floor and was covered in paper and everything from the fight. Okay. And then he fell to the floor, and that's, well, as I was pushing the boxes atop of him.
Okay. Well, you indicated that you think that the heavy boxes are what killed him, which is, you know, that would lead to some sort of asphyxiation. But the autopsy says that, you know, blunt force trauma, which is the paper being put on top of him, is it wouldn't create blunt force trauma unless you put a whole powder on it. But the other thing is, it's the autopsy indicates that the doctor doing the autopsy felt that the injuries to the chest were like somebody stomped on his chest. You know, in other words, several inches of the foot. But that's fine. I, you know, that's what. Okay, I'm just pointing out the difference between what you said and what the autopsy said.
Yes, sir.
Another question I have for you is, you just spoke about all this good work ethic and everything you got from your mother, but you ran off while you were still a juvenile and managed to, you know, get involved with us, went on to San Diego, and when they tried to stop you in a stolen car, you tried to flee from them, and who knows how far you'd have driven if you wouldn't have spun out on the first corner. But I fail to see how at 17 years of age you've had with this kind of behavior that you had much of anything instilled in you at home. But I guess that's my opinion of what's going on. So I don't have any further questions, sir. Thank you.
May I offer something, Mr. Neal?
Well, you'll have an opportunity for a final statement here in a couple of minutes, sir. So.
Okay. So we're going to go to Ms. Rittenhouse.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Luckadoo, I'm reading from the pre-sentence investigation talking about the offense itself. And there are a couple of police officers that were questioned about the actual offense. And one of them, and I'll just read a quote from here, responded by saying that the self-defense motive was, quote, nonsense. Another police officer who had, at that time, 16 years of experience as a police officer said there was no way the condition of the body in the crime scene suggested that the victim was killed in self-defense. Yet another individual, the deputy county attorney, said he found it difficult to believe this was a case of self-defense, and considering that the victim's head was, quote, beaten to a pulp. Mr. Luckadoo, what do you have to say about those?
First of all, as far as the last comment and beaten to a pulp, I would refer you, with all due respect, to the medical examiner's statements and what he said in regard to it. Is it true that I struck Mr. Strassi a number of times in the head with a bar? That is true. That is absolutely true. However, once those injuries were looked at by the medical examiner, he determined that there was only a single minor skull fracture, and that was in the thinnest portion of the skull itself. There were no underlying major skull fractures, and outside of that, there was also no injury to the face or throat area, other than just a minor superficial abrasion to the chin itself. And as far as the arguments or the statements by those officers, I would say that was at the initial part of the investigation, and so I don't really know what to comment on that, other than that I don't know how much of the evidence that they had seen at that point.
All right, thank you, Mr.
So, Dr. Ryan.
Thank you, Supreme Mr. Johnson. I'm going to be very brief. I have some other questions, but I'll be very brief now. town consideration. But I guess one of the things that concerned me, sir, is you are smart, and I said smart in this case, I mean intellectually individual. You've carried yourself this morning so very well, but it just seemed to me that let me just ask this first. You had all these problems as a teenager, as a young person, juvenile and young adult, and you mentioned it, that's going to be a number of reasons. When did you give your life to God, sir?
Well, I was brought up, first of all, sir, I was brought up in Baptist church as a kid, and so we attended church fairly regularly, and that I was baptized at an early age at first, and then when I was in county jail, I was rebaptized again, and then shortly after my imprisonment, I was baptized a third time. And the way it has been explained to me is that even though you've given your life over to God, first of all, as a child, you're always marked as a child. No matter where you go and what you do in life, you're always marked in that way. And so I just felt at different times in my life there the desire to give my life over to God again in that way.
Let me just ask this for kind of consideration. You explained everything so well, so you have everything down perfect. So I am one board member to discern what you're saying, the truth from the non-truth. You said it so well. You know, it's kind of like a textbook. You've really done your homework, and I give you credit for that, and commend you for it. Commend you for the classes and the degrees that you receive. But I'm still trying to make a determination in my mind, how can I tell the truth from the non-truth, sir?
I can appreciate that. I can appreciate that. And I would say that is probably the greatest challenge that I have before you today is how can you look at me and say that I'm any different than I was 30 years ago? How can I not be the same person? And I can tell you that when I look back on who I was 30 years ago, at times I don't even recognize that part of me. I'm not saying that I was a terrible individual at that point, but I mean, even just lacking direction. I am so highly motivated now. I mean, my entire day is filled with activities to better myself and help others in that way. And it's not a matter of me trying to impress the parole board. It's not a matter of me doing this for someone else's sake. This is truly who I want to be. I strive to be a good person. I strive to ultimately be a productive member of society again. And I know this is an uphill battle for me.
Okay, sir.
I
really would like to talk with you more, but because of time consideration, I'm going to end my questions at this point so that we can move on at this time, especially since you have supporters on the forum and all that. Thank you so very much, sir, and thank you, Mr. Johnson.
All right. So, Mr. Rutherford, what we're going to do right now, we're going to go to the supporters that you have on the phone. I'm going to first, go to your mother, Miss Nancy Bacon. I think there's a couple of people there with her. Miss Beck, are you on the line still? Miss Beck?
Yes.
So, Miss Beck, I know that you have a couple of people there with you. I want to give you the opportunity and whoever's there, if you want to be speaking for everyone there, to go ahead and speak at this time. If you get ready to speak, would you just say your full name and go ahead and present the information to the board, please?
Okay, my name is Nancy Beck, and I'm Kelly's mom.
Okay, and what did you want to tell the board?
Well, that other guy, I don't know his name, that said Kelly didn't want any directions at home. Let me tell you something, we was a loving family, and we loved our son very, very much. And Kelly was in the eighth grade, he was inducted into the Alpha Beta Club on his grades and character and the way he learned himself. I took him when he was in the 12th grade here at Freedom High School. I took him for his Air Force test. He was wanting to go in Air Force. He made 100 on his test. And the guy said, you know, said, as smart as you are, said, you keep your nose clean and you can come back in. But I tell you what, you ought to consider this. My son, I took him off the wrestling team probably about a month before he left here because I'd come in and Kelly would be crying with his neck or back because he couldn't wrestle them other guys. I took him off the wrestling team and Kelly was, you have to consider this. My son was 5'2", never weighed over 120 pounds in his life. And then he goes out there and I don't know what happened. But from what I hear, and I've been to Arizona 4 times, Mr. Starachi was 6'4", he weighed 245 pounds. He had a 7-degree black belt and he was 45 years old. Now I tell you what, my son is not going to make that much harm to that man, and you know, as little as he was. And I will say this, Kelly had just turned 18 when he got sent off to prison. And you people just don't know how much we love Kelly and want him home. And I think we've served enough time. Kelly may be serving time, but we've also served time out here. I mean, our heart is broke every day because our family is not together. And his daddy has already passed away. His grandmother passed away. And I am 74 years old, and I would like to have a little time with my son before I pass away. So I wish that y'all would feel free in your heart to let my son come home. And don't you think 37 years, nobody really knows what happened. 12 people sent my son away for his entire life. If I could get 12 people who was on trial, I could have you son away for life too. And I just want my son to come home. Thank you.
Okay, well, Ms. Beck, thank you. I just want to, and I've been here, I didn't really recall any of the boys saying that he didn't have any direction. Matter of fact, I think that he also, your son said that he had great direction from his family and spoke very highly of the family and the support of your family.
There's one guy who turned about as a teenager or something. He must not have no direction at home.
I think he said he didn't have any direction. You know, I think he asked about his direction and decisions that he made, but I don't make anyone comment on that. But at the other time, that, you know, we do have a court system, and your son has admitted, you know, his guilt and wrongdoing in his crime, even though he was convicted by a jury and sent to prison. I just wanted to just comment. Is there anyone else there that want to comment, Ms. Beck?
You want to say something? This is my daughter.
My name is Rhonda. I'm Kelly's sister.
Okay, Rhonda, could you say excuse me?
Rhonda.
Yes. I need you to state your full name, okay?
Okay. Rhonda Pearson. And I'm Kelly's sister.
Okay.
I just wanted to talk about, I know you guys know all about the case and all that, and I don't want to have to go into all that discussion, but I'm here as his sister, as family support. I'm the one who got all the packets together and made sure that you guys also had videos. We had lots of family members at different times through the year that we got together and to give their support too. But Kelly has been gone almost 30 years from us. And it is true like my mom says, he's done time, but we have done time in the free world waiting on him. And yes, I know he has admitted to the wrongdoing and a life was taken. And I know he served his time, but I can tell you, knowing him from a young teenager that this happened to, Kelly was a typical teenager at the time. I mean, he did crazy things. He just, even though he had a lot of love and support at home, he just, I don't know, he kind of lost his way. And he just left and we didn't know where he was when all this happened. But even though he's been incarcerated for this long of time, you know, we could have just dropped him and just said, oh, well, we're on our own, but we love him. And we're here to support him, and we're here for him if he can be released. To us in North Carolina, it has been such a hardship on our family in the last 30 years to try to even, in 30 years I've seen my brother probably 4 times, and my mom got him sent in 1 time because it's such expense to fly from here to Arizona. I mean, we're like over 2,000 miles away, and every time we come out there, it's at least $2,000 or more, just usually the two of us. Out there and back and expenses and stuff. But saying that too, if he's released to us, we really wish that you guys would consider release to here, because here he has family, he has support. We've already got his home ready for him. He's got a place to stay. We're here to support him and everything to make sure that he complies with our rules and regulations, appointments pertaining to his parole. If he's paroled to Arizona, yes, I realize that he can go to what they call a halfway house, which I don't really know much about. But there he really doesn't have the family support, and he doesn't have somebody to really be accountable to besides those people directly over him for the parole, but I'm saying he won't have any family support. We feel like it's so important that he comes home to be able to be with us so we can make sure that Kelly can transition back into society and become a progressive citizen again. And I know he's changed so much. He is so different now, and he's grown a lot, and yes, he made mistakes, but I can see. And even when I talk to some of the people in charge there at the prison sometimes, how they talk about how Kelly is such a likable person and how he works so hard to help these inmates. It's not that, this is not for show. This is, honestly, I believe this is his calling, is to really help people to learn to read, to write, to go to school, to be healthy, to live right and make better choices.
Okay.
And I don't know what more to say than just know that we're here to please him hold her, and we would love for him to be here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Pearson. I think if there's no one else there, is anybody else there speaking?
My daughter, who is on the other line, Tim Malachi, she's willing to speak.
Okay, I'm going to go. Just wanted to make sure there was no one else on the line with you. So I'm going to go ahead to Ms. Lackey.
Hi there. My name is Tamara Lackey. Do you want me to continue or
yes,
give me my name again?
No, no. You said your name. Go ahead and present what you want to present to the board, please.
Okay. Like I said, my name is Tamara Lackey. I'm Kelly's niece. Honestly, I don't really know a whole lot about Kelly. When he got sent off, I was just a little girl. I might have been 1 or 2. So I don't really have that many memories of Kelly. But what I can tell you, just talking to him and writing letters to him over the 30 years that he's been in prison, I've learned a lot about him. I've heard a lot about the case. You know, different aspects of it. Hearing it again today on the phone kind of brings it back full circle. I just want to say a couple short things. Kelly is loved. He has a huge support system here in North Carolina. I do think that, you know, this situation, these were decisions that he made, bad decisions on his part, that he will forever have to live with. On top of the time that he's already served incarcerated for the crime. And, you know, I think that weighs a lot on people, knowing that that's something, regardless if he gets paroled out to come home or has to stay incarcerated, he's going to forever live with that, you know, sentence in his body. And I just wanted to say that if he is paroled out, and don't have to do the house arrest. I just wanted to let you guys know on kind of a professional aspect of it. You know, I am a probation and parole officer in North Carolina. I actually work in the county that he would be coming home to if granted. And I can tell you that, you know, on that aspect of it, just being in this line of work, dealing with different types of offenders every day, you know, from people that are child rapists to, you know, murderers to people that just steal things from other people, they are still people. They do deserve, you know, a second chance to start over. And even if it is house arrest, you know, yes, that is strict. There are rules, regulations that he'll have to follow, but I really believe that, you know, he at least needs the opportunity to try. That's all I have to say. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Ms. Lackey, was there someone else there with you that wanted to speak?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand you.
There was no one else there with you that wanted to speak. I understand that.
No, I'm by myself.
Okay, all right. Thank you. I'm going to see if the board has any questions for anyone that the family supporters at this time. Okay, same more comments coming from the board. I do want to ask a couple of questions of the family, and probably Ms. Bennett, you may be the best one to answer this question. I'm not sure. However, if this doesn't say, because we have no idea what the board's going to do, but if he was paroled to home arrest and here in the state of Arizona, Department of Correction requires that he has 2 months of living expenses and 2 months of food to be able to take care of himself or support for that. Mr. Lockadoo, do you have that?
Yes, sir. That would not be a problem. One of the statements that I sent as part of my parole packet is a copy of my banking statement where I have over $2,200 in savings.
Okay.
From my retention account as well as my dedicated discharge account, so that would not be a problem. Okay. And if I may also add to that, sir, Able House, this has been my understanding, and maybe you can give some clarification to this. I have been told before that the board does not have the authority to parole directly out of state. Of course, my first absolute desire would to be with my family, if that is an option in that way. And we already have set up an apartment there of my own that's set up, as well as secondary choice being my family's immediate home. And even thirdly, I mean, if you want me in a house arrest at a halfway house there in North Carolina, that would be fine.
Mr.
Lackadoo,
we do have your plans here. Let me just, you know, I'm asking these questions for a reason, because we need to make sure that we have it on the record before this board goes into discussion. But I do want to make a couple of comments, and actually, it is your responsibility. This board has no authority whether to recommend that you get an interstate compact. You have to apply and go through that process through the Department of Corrections, and the Department of Corrections and the parole office would make that dedication whether you are getting an interstate compact, which takes a period of time for that to actually go through. So this board has no authority to make that type of decision whether you go back to North Carolina, but that would be something that would be worked out between you, Department of Correction, and the parole office. We do need to make sure that this board, coming from the Department of Correction, make sure that you have 2 months of living expenses and 2 months of expenses. I wanted to just make sure that your family was aware of this and ask if they would also be willing to assist and support you if you were released out on home arrest.
My family has always been very supportive in that way, even financially, sir. But as far as the 2 months, it would not be a problem.
Okay.
In any way.
All right. So, Mr. Lockadoo, the board's about to go into discussion. So we're coming up on the conclusion of your hearing where we'll make a determination as to what we're going to do in reference to your parole. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the board, sir, without repeating yourself that you haven't already said?
Yes, sir. First of all, I would like to first address Mr. Neal's concerns regarding the cause of death, and if I may, because I know you're a man very educated in this. Mr. Neal, I would beg you to look at the the medical examiner's report in that way. Sir, I know you have tremendous knowledge in this matter. This was a matter of where, given the severity of the sternum fracture itself, sir, there was no overlying contusion in that matter other than just a small right angle contusion, right angle, I repeat, over the left pec in that way. And as Mr. Johnson had pointed out previously, I was wearing deck shoes, which have no right angles to them at all. And you mentioned, sir, that it would take a tremendous amount of weight, such as a pallet of paper. So that's exactly what it was. This was a matter of, this was a huge pallet of boxes of green paper that were about 3 by 3 feet in width. And it was estimated that they were hundreds of pounds in weight. In fact, the officers that first arrived on scene said it was approximately 4 feet of paper and boxes atop him, and another officer estimated that it weighed potentially hundreds of pounds. On another note, in that way, as far as for here in Arizona, and having things set up here, I have been accepted by Able House as far as a halfway house. I just again spoke with the director of the halfway house just the other day. She is completely supportive. I asked her what measures that I could provide to the board as far as their oversight and everything. They have 24-hour staffing there. Home arrest is no problem whatsoever for them. They have multiple programs that are available there, as well as extracurricular in the way of Bible study programs and everything that way. Transportation is not a problem. I would already have a job lined up here in that way. I've attended a number of job fairs and everything here, and that's actually where I met the vice president of Bean Drywall, Mr. Mike Sell, and I spoke with him just at the last job fair that we had. And he assured me, given my level of experience and everything, because I mean, I grew up working for my parents and their businesses and everything, and my mother owns her own construction company there. She's operated for over 35 years. And Mr. Sell explained that, given my level of experience in the work field and everything, that I would start off no problem, $18 to $25 an hour. So employment would not be a problem, housing would not be a problem, transportation that way, the halfway house supports transportation. And I assure you, just as long as the board was comfortable with it, just as soon as I could transfer my parole to out of state to be with my family, that's my absolute intent. But what I want to reassure the board with in this way, more than anything, is this. I understand who I am sitting here today before you. And I understand to the absolute degree the decision that you have to make today and the weight of that decision. And honestly, in your position, I would be so inclined to be the most extremely conservative in this matter. But I swear to you, you will not find someone who is trying harder to be a better person today. You will not find someone who is trying harder to make the most out of every single day of his life. And so, regardless of what decision you come to today, even if it means I go back to that cell, I will continue to be that person. I will continue to have that drive. And I will be grateful for any opportunity that you give me. But I promise you, if you give me this chance, you will not regret it. I will be someone that you can hold up with esteem and say, this is an example. I will be that person.
Okay.
That is the person I strive to be today.
Okay, Mr. Lockadoo. The board's going to go into discussion, sir. I'm going to ask you to remain on the phone while the board's in discussion, and you have some supporters that's also on the line. I'm going to ask them to remain on the phone while the board's in discussion. I'm going to ask each and every one of you to remain silent while the board's in discussion. while the board's in discussion, so we will make a determination as to what decision we'll make in regards to your parole, sir. But we need you to remain on the phone, remain silent. We don't discuss this case prior to this hearing, so this will be the first time this board's had the opportunity to actually discuss the case. So I am going to say that the board is now in discussion. Ask everyone to remain on the phone and to remain silent while the board is in discussion. This is a case, I have to say, that Mr. Luckadoo is a very, very intelligent young man. He's obtained several AA degrees since he's been incarcerated. He has not had any issues since, I believe it was 2008, if my memory serves me correct, that he's been in there. It's kind of a unique case, too, because he's so intelligent, he's had the opportunity to go through his case file and go through all his information, and that certainly we don't have the police report, we just have the pre-sentence report that's actually coming from the court that we have here. And according to his mother, Miss Beck, he was an extremely intelligent young man. At a young age, he took the Air Force test and scored 100% on the test. When he actually scored that, by the fact that he was able to get his degrees that he attained while he's been incarcerated also shows that. He's also been involved in teaching some classes and working with some students, prisoners there while he's been in there. Certainly we have no control over whether he gets the interstate compact or not. The interstate compact that he has in there, the autopsy said that he had a blunt force injury. It also said that when the police officers arrived, they saw boxes on top of the victim, that he had a single minor skull factor according to the autopsy report. And, you know, I think Mr. Luckadoo is very intelligent, but I think he's been honest. He's just one who's been able to answer all those questions. He's taken full responsibility for his actions. He hasn't tried to deny any of his actions or put blame for anyone else on the action that he actually took. His shoe print was, according to the pre-sentence report, his shoe print was found in what appeared to be the blood. Looks like there was blood in the lace of his shoes that was actually there. I think according to his mom, she said that he was 5'2", 120 pounds, and the victim was 6'4", 225 pounds, which would mean that there had to have been really one strong struggle that actually took place, if that's actually the size and the weight of the victim. And Mr. Lockwood, at that time, I didn't go back into the report to see exactly what size he is now, but you know, looking at him, he's definitely not 6'2 or 6'4 or 225 pounds. Mr. Lockwood says that when he left, the victim was under the boxes and still breathing at that time. And, there are letters in here from the victim's family. This talks about statements in here from the victim's family, which talk about the harm that is done to their family and what he has exactly done. However, I'm going to say that I think that Mr. Lockadoo is being honest, that he is trying to be the best person that he can be, although because he's so intelligent, it almost seems as though you want to question, you know, keep questioning what he's saying. But he, you know, he's not making up stories. He's coming up with the answers based on the documentation that's in there from the autopsy and court records that we actually have included in here. I think that if Mr. Lockwood was released, that he wouldn't cause any more harm. He's been in prison almost 30 or 30 plus years. He went in prison since he was 18 years old. He's been incarcerated in prison almost twice the time that he's been alive. That he's 18, just turning 18 when he
went to prison. Now, 30 years later, he's coming back before this board. So I would not be indebted to Mr. Lockerlew receiving home arrest based on the information, based on the interview. He does have a tremendous amount of family support. Although there's no family support here for him, it would be his responsibility and his family's responsibility for doing it. I don't think he would be likely to go out and commit any more harm to the community. However, I'm willing to listen to the rest of my colleagues. Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I am not necessarily taking a counter position to you, but I do want to put this on the record that I won't dismiss Mr. Lockerlew's accomplishments and good record of the Department of Corrections. It's that I have intuitive concerns about his capacity for want, manipulation, and violence, even when this crime happened before he was fully emotionally developed. So that's, this is, it's making it hard for me to get completely on board for home arrest or parole, but I'm staying open. Thank you, sir.
Ms. Redhouse.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I'm glad you said that, Mr. Quinones, because that kind of says in words the intuitive concern. That sums it up for me. I just feel like there are too many unexplained things that are hanging. And I would not be in favor of parole at this time.
Just to know.
I agree with Mr. Thompson and Ms. Rittenhouse. I think my biggest concern is over this sentencing, because if you look at the sentencing documentation, I have never seen this written this way, but the sentence is defendant's lifetime. To me, that means his lifetime. And there's nowhere in the sentencing information that says life or at least 25 years before the end of the parole. It says defendant's lifetime. And that is very, very worrisome to me about any kind of release, now parole to another consecutive sentence or something is a totally different issue. But if this means, if our hearing today is for any kind of release, that disturbs me greatly. There's a couple of other things that bother me too, and so when you brought up about the detective saying his head looked like it was beaten to a pulp, I have taken pictures in my career of people's heads that they were alive and well enough to drive themselves to the police department, but they had several hundred stitches, and the pictures that were taken immediately after the offense occurred, their head looked like it was beaten to a pulp. But they either had mangled or no fractures, but a whole lot of lacerations and head wounds always bleed profusely. So, but, you know, to go back to the autopsy report about factors in the one minor fracture and the rest of those lacerations, to me that's a way to talk away the impressions of the detective, and which is pretty much in the vernacular of anybody you would be talking to describing something. Did he say, you know, should the dead friend have just said that he was on the beat to a pulp, and then he said he would return to the autopsy report. He still didn't have a full autopsy report. But I guess it's more of an intuitive thing. My life is, I just, you know, can't go into a lot of it. And then there's the other thing, and this is something I noticed throughout this, very little mention by anybody of other, you know, Mr. Lockerlew is really not sure what the person did or anything, but there was almost no mention of the victim specifically as far as that type goes. Explanation of injuries, you know, handcuffs, things like that, but it wasn't ever mentioned in the respect of here's a person at 45 whose life was taken, who may or may not have kids or wife, but had family that we'll never be able to get a parole to see the victim again. So there's quite a few issues that make me not at all in favor of any type of release today. Thank you.
Dr. Wright, do you have any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I'm going to be very brief. I think that, yes, he's a very intelligent young man, and we wish him well. I think that there are still some questions that, that still need to be answered before I would be willing to vote for him to be released, whether it would be on home arrest, absolute discharge, or general parole. And I think that until some of those are answered, I can't be in favor at this time. I think that, yes, he's made progress, and I'm sure that he will continue to make progress. But there are still some questions, and I think that my colleagues have already asked those questions. Therefore, I'm not going over them. Therefore, at this time, I'm not in favor, sir.
Okay, therefore, I think we've had all the comments from the board. I am going to, and I'm not sure we'll get a counter motion on this, but I am going to make a motion to grant Mr. Lockadoo home arrest. And seeing that there's no second on that, I'm going to ask for a counter motion.
I move to deny Mr. Lockadoo whether parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge at this time.
Second.
Agree.
Mr. Cahill, is it your second?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so I also asked for a 1-year set off.
Agreed.
Reasons for denial: serious and violent offense, loss of human life, serious bodily injury, criminal history, let's say a prior criminal history was a juvenile, though at the time there was no indication that he was on probation or parole, then I can see the incarceration, that he had a history of alcoholic behavior. Unless anything else, he did have a good release plan and family support. I just wanted to check with the rest of the board to see if there's anything else that they would want included in that. Okay, not hearing any other comments from the board. Mr. Lockadoo?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so the board has voted to deny your parole, either home arrest, regular parole, or absolute discharge at this time. So the reasons for it is that it was a serious and violent offense, loss of human life, serious bodily injury, prior criminal history. Were the reasons for your denial, sir. Did you understand your reasons for denial?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Mr. Lockadoo, I want to thank you for taking the opportunity for appearing before this board. That's going to conclude your hearing at this time, sir. We will be hanging up the phone. You will be certified to come back before this board in about a year when the DOC certifies you eligible to come back before this board, sir.
Yes, sir.
And that's going to conclude your hearing at this time. For those of you who are on the phone, we're going to be disconnecting at this time. We do want to thank you for taking the time and opportunity.
Can I tell you something before you go? This is Kelly's mom. When that public defender, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
When that defender, public defender, come out here to my house,
okay.
He told me that he tried to get Kelly to say he did all that and everything. He told me myself, he said, as long as Kelly lives, I'm gonna keep him in prison the rest of his life. Now I tell you what, that y'all don't know, if that was your son and he was in our shoes, what would you do? Our heart is just broken now.
Well, Miss, we do understand how you feel. However, that was a decision of the board, and that's going to conclude the hearing at this time. So we do
participate. He was a young teenager.
We
went after, and I didn't know he wasn't trying to get away from this big man.
We weren't there at the trial. However, based on the information we have, that was a decision of the board. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but we do have some other hearings to go ahead on to. We have concluded the hearing for Mr. Luckadoo at this time. He'll be certified eligible to come back before this board again in about a year. And at that time, the board will then take everything again into consideration. And thank you for participating in the hearing today.
Four times.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Thank you. We'll disconnect you at this time.
And so would you put this